This is Ariana Cordova with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Gloria Tristani, former FCC commissioner, former commissioner for the New Mexico State Corporation Commission, and a winner of the Edward R. Roybal Award for Outstanding Public Service. Gloria, welcome back to Generation Justice.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So tell us more about yourself and your career.
I guess the first thing is I'm a lawyer, and I became a lawyer later in life. I was in my 30s, but I thought it was really important for myself as a woman to have professional credentials, and the law degree and the study of the law gave me those credentials and gave me the opportunity to be able to help my community, my state, and the nation.
And what was your journey to becoming an FCC commissioner?
It was a pretty long journey, but I think it began, and I have to mention my grandfather, the late Senator Dennis Chavez, and the strong presence of his life when I was growing up. Although he died when I was 9 years old, my mother made sure that we knew that my grandfather had not only served, but that he had served with a passion to help his fellow New Mexicans and his fellow Americans and the world. And so I, in the back of my head, I always had this, you have to go into public service and help your fellow human beings. So then I studied law here at UNM at the University of New Mexico School of Law when I was in my 30s. I graduated in 1990, and I practiced law for a few years, and then I decided to run for the New Mexico State Corporation Commission, and by the way, became the first woman to ever be elected to that body. I defeated a male incumbent. Very proud of that. I'm very proud of that because everybody told me that as a woman, I could not win. This was in 1994. They told me a woman will not be able to win that seat. And I just thought, you know, if you have the credentials, if you have the education, and that's what I meant by credentials, and you have the passion to serve and to help, you can do it. And I won. And that commission at the time regulated telecommunications. And I was there for about 2.5 years. I did what I thought was very good consumer work, and President Clinton picked me in 1997 to go to the FCC, and I was surprised by the call from the White House, and I initially did not want to leave New Mexico. You know, this is a beautiful state. This is where I was serving, but you get a call from your president, and it's hard to say no. And I'm glad I went. I'm very glad. So I went in 1997, very proud to serve there and very humbled to serve there and to serve in a time, I'm going back to 97, but already in 97, the internet was in full development and telecommunications was changing in a radical way.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's wonderful. And what were some of the issues that you championed during your time as an FCC commissioner?
The first and foremost issue was to make sure that with this new internet, that people were able to connect to the internet. You know, a lot of people thought, well, why should everybody be able to connect? That's the technology of the future. And I thought early on that this was going to be a technology that we were all going to be using and that was going to become essential to our livelihoods. And so a big program that I pushed was called the E-Rate for Education Rate, the Schools and Libraries program that aimed to connect every classroom in the United States to the internet. And so that was very important. Also very important to make sure that rural communities were equally connected, not only to the internet, but just to the plain old telephone service back then. We used to call it POTS, plain old telephone service, POTS, and to that they had good wireless connectivity. And, of course, that all of this be affordable. That was a big part of my agenda, was that these services have to be affordable. It's of no use if actually you have them available if people can't afford it. So affordability, connecting students all over the nation to the internet, but particularly students in the neediest schools, making sure that rural communities and Native American communities were fully connected to the technology of then. And it's still, I mean, it was my issue goodness, almost 22 years ago, it's still a fundamental issue now. Things change, but they don't change.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And during your journey, what lessons have you learned that you would want other Latinas or women of color to know?
I think it's critical that a lot of people helped me in my career going forward, but it's really kind of critical to have role models. And in my case, I was very lucky. I had a role model right in my family, my grandfather, who was also my godfather. But role models are very important, because if you see someone that has struggled against incredible odds to make it, or not struggled, who has made it, my grandfather, kind of out of nothing, became a U.S. senator, and he didn't even complete school, but he went to law school. You see things like that, then you think, well, I've had it pretty well. Why? Just because I'm a woman, that's not going to stop me from being elected. So it's really important to have role models. So the next thing, what goes with that, is when you achieve something, then it's really important to give back to your community, to reach out to others and let them know you can also do it. And one of the things I really enjoyed when I was New Mexico State Corporation Commission, and I did this at the FCC, but not as much, as I would go all over the state speaking to young people, even Girl State, and letting them know you too can do it, but you're going to have to work hard, and you're going to have to get as educated as you can, because you know, they can take a lot of things from you, and you can lose your house and lose money, but they cannot take away your education. Absolutely. And that's fundamental.
Mm-hmm. Last time we talked about your amazing grandfather. Today I'd love to hear more about your grandmother and your mother and how they've influenced you.
My grandmother, and I'm going to share something that might be funny, but when I would tell her when I was little, oh, I want to grow up and be a senator like my grandfather. And she'd look at me and she'd say, well, why don't you marry one? She was of that generation when they could not conceive that. Mm-hmm. My mother was a total opposite. And my mother was a housewife, so she didn't run for office. But I think if she'd been born 20 years later, she would have. Mm-hmm. But she was like, my mother was like, you can do anything, you can be anything. And she was very much her father's daughter and believed that it was really important to serve. Mm-hmm. and to give to people. And she had a quality that I think my grandfather had, which was she loved all kinds of people. She was just as comfortable talking to the hoi polloi as talking to, you know, the person at the grocery store that was helping her. Or, I mean, she was just one of those people that she felt comfortable with everybody. I hear that about my grandfather, that you know, he loved people, and that's why he loved to serve. So it's also really important to respect all your fellow human beings, even if they're different in any way, shape, or form. That's really important to respect that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And what advice do you have for young women interested in law and policy?
First, and I've said this several times, but you have to strive to get the best education you can. That's one. Look for the role models, because they will help you through the difficult times. If you think you're having it tough now, I mean, there's some amazing women who overcame odds, who did things when women couldn't even step into schools to get educations, and they stride beyond all odds. Not to be afraid, whether you're running for office or in a position where you think you should be in a better position, to demand and to go for what might seem a difficult goal. I think it's easy for women. I mean, it happens to men as well, but more for women to get kind of scared away from doing things. Another piece of advice I give is there's never the right time to do things. I've advised a couple women to room. They say, no, it's not the right time. And I'm saying, if you check for that perfect time, it's not going to be there. So you have to go when you're ready to go and not be scared. You're going to have to work very hard. You're going to have to work harder than men. Still, the world has changed, and it's wonderful to have a Congress that has so many women, but you're still going to have to work harder. But I think one of the most important things is you cannot let the naysayers or those who still treat you like you're a young girl, even though you're a whole, fully percent Wonder Woman, you cannot let that bother you. You just have to kind of flush it aside and not let it bother you. And I'm reminded of a quote that from Eleanor Roosevelt, who had it pretty tough as a woman and as a wife of a very beloved and powerful president. But she was quite a woman, and she said, "A woman in politics has to have the skin of a rhinoceros, and not let it bother you. You just you soldier on."
What were you like at my age?
Not as serious as you are. I was a very, I think, relatively happy teenager, and I wasn't yet seriously involved in politics. Now, I did read a lot. My friends used to call me, I grew up in Puerto Rico, instead the term isn't bookworm. They called me a come libro, which means that you literally eat the books. And they called me that because they were mad. You know, I wouldn't go play and I'd be come libro. But, you know, it's important to read. And it's important to read history. We really need to read history. I never tire. I'm 65 years old, and I am still reading history and finding out things that I didn't know. And I'm very smart. By the way, let me add one thing that I forgot to say. Women, when we're out there, we tend not to brag about ourselves because we've been taught not to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're smart, if you're accomplished, and you're on the government track or the political track, you need to let people know because no one else is going to say it as well as you, and no one else may say it. So you got to tell them, I'm smart, I'm educated, I'm committed, I'm passionate. That's mm-hmm. really important.
Thank you. What do you hope for young women of color like myself?
I'm very, very hopeful about the future because I see, even in these very troubling and hateful times, and I say hateful because there are those in power, and I don't have to say names, that inspire hate every day, that condone hate and racism and call people animals. Even in these very, very hateful times, I see a new generation, and not just a new, but older and a new generation of people that are so much more accepting of the differences in between us, whether they're ethnic, because they're sexual orientation, whatever they may be. And so I'm very, very hopeful. Having said that, boy, if women have it hard, women of color have it harder. Mm-hmm. And that, but that's just part of the drill. So again, I'm very much of the mindset, you cannot let it impact you negatively. You just got to soldier on. And I see a very, very bright future, but you have to fight for it.
It's wonderful to hear. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I'm very grateful that I have been in public service, serving government and also worked for nonprofits, and that I've had the opportunity to help my fellow human beings. And I think there is really no greater satisfaction than to be able to help your community. And some people help as doctors, some people help as nurses. But there's a real, real important place for people helping government or in nonprofits or in community organizing. I was very blessed. I grew up, I was privileged. But I did study hard. I did take advantage of you know, the educational tools of a loving family. While I grew up privileged, I knew that the most important thing is to make sure that your fellow human beings have those same opportunities. And human, you know, in this world we live in, we don't all have the same opportunities. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to reach behind, to our sides, ahead, and keep helping fellow human beings so that they can have opportunities and equal their greatest potential. And then be able to help others as well.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I just wanted to thank you again for taking the time to come and speak with me again.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been delightful to be here. Thank you. Gracias.
For Generation Justice, this is Adriana Cordova.